The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Silver Roof Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Got a little sunshine today, finally. And as always, my heart is full of sunshine. And we have an awful lot to do. We're keeping an eye out. We're going to see if the Supreme Court issues any of those rulings, one that has a local tie, the Bremerton Praying High School football coach, also Roe v. Wade. Something could come down this afternoon. Maybe it's going to be later this week, but we're keeping an eye out for you on any breaking news. But one thing that is big on my mind today is our children, what we are doing to them. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
You may recall that we had a story that we talked about quite a bit last week, how public schools in Washington have now decided that kids can take a mental health day anytime they want. If they don't feel like going to school, they can just pull the covers up over their cozy little heads in bed and say, "Mom, I need a break." And they can just take a mental health break. And as you may know, I'm against such things unless the child is clinically suffering from some kind of a mental illness or depression. Then we're talking about something else. But I'm talking about for the vast majority of kids who are not suffering from any clinical issues mentally. But the idea that kids can just take a mental health break, this is so antithetical from everything that I know as a parent and as a coach and as somebody who I think I've got a pretty good track record of working with kids. And this is the message that we are now giving, that if you just don't feel like doing something, just don't do it. You know, this gets back to the, you know, era where trophies don't mean anything. And you don't have to win a championship to get a trophy. Just finish in sixth place. We'll give you a trophy. And what we're seeing is kids who cannot compete on a global economic stage anymore, where 50% of the kids in Washington State can't meet basic English proficiency standards. 72% cannot meet basic math proficiency standards. And the message that we keep sending is, well, it's no big deal, but it is a big deal. And I've always believed, as a parent, as a coach, as an adult in our society, that we should always strive ourselves, but certainly try to instill in children a mentality that you should be your very best. You should reach your potential. You should not settle for 60% or 80% or 98%. That you should always strive to do your best. I'll tell you a little story in just a couple of minutes here. But the reason that I'm bringing this up is because in light of Washington State telling kids that they can take mental health days, I saw a beautiful story about a 18-year-old girl down in California. Her name is Lindsay Frost. She is graduating from high school with 13 years of perfect attendance, has never missed one day, has never missed one class in 13 years of going to school. And I watched the local news down there do a story about her. She's in San Marcos, California. And I just want to do a little compare and contrast. What do you think is a better way? And this is not a rhetorical question. I'd truly love to hear your thoughts. What do you think is a better way to try to encourage kids to approach life? By saying, well, if you need a mental health day, just don't go today. Or the way this kid approaches life.
In kindergarten, I got the perfect attendance award first, and I really liked the idea of it just because it was very, like, all you had to do was show up to get it. And then I thought to myself, I was like, it'd be a neat story to tell my kids one day that I'd, like, if I was able to do it every year.
Wait, hold on. School. You're 10 years old, and you're thinking, this is something I could someday tell my children.
Yes.
Okay, so what does that tell? Tells you that this girl is goal-oriented. She thinks about her future. She thinks about the ramifications. Even when she was 10 years old, she was thinking, this would be a great accomplishment. She sets goals, and she goes out and achieves those goals, which is one of the keys to success in life. Goal setting is one of the most tremendous, motivating, and powerful forces in our life.
This is pretty rare.
It's very rare.
San Marcos High School principal Adam Dawson says, who wouldn't hire an iron woman like Lindsay?
What employer doesn't want someone who's there every day?
You earned a 4.0 or higher.
As well as a standout student.
It's not just about showing up, but it's also about excelling as a 4.0 student, actually above a 4.0. Still don't know how that works.
The 4.31 GPA.
She's an impressive student, and having her in class was really, really a joy.
Tara Rossi was Lindsay's U.S. history teacher last year during virtual learning.
What do people say when you tell them that?
They're kind of mostly shocked. They're kind of like, whoa.
You're heading off to college.
Yes.
You're going to?
Rice University.
And will you miss any days at Rice?
Probably not.
I noticed that for our interview, you were right on time.
Well, I'm not going to be absent.
Okay, she seems like just a delightful young woman, 18-year-old Lindsay Frost. And I was thinking, you know, if I was an employer and I had a choice between a Lindsay Frost who shows up every day and excels when she shows up versus this mentality that we're instilling in our kids here in Washington State, that if you don't feel like doing something, just don't do it. Now, my wife and I, we would help our kids get through challenges and understand that just because you don't feel like doing something doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. Sometimes you do have to suck it up. Sometimes you do have to just power your way through. And I assure you, as a coach, you're not allowed to miss practices because you just don't feel like running today. You're not allowed to do that. And I'm confident that that approach is what helps kids reach their potential. Not this, you can just do what you feel like doing. And if you don't feel like doing something, just don't do it. Now, I'm going to repeat because I don't want anybody to commingle this with kids who are, you know, have suicidal ideations or, you know, severe mental illness. That's not who I'm talking about. I'm talking about the vast majority of kids who just feel blue sometimes, don't feel like doing something sometimes. And what we are doing in this state, everything is upside down. I mean, I'm telling you, in almost every aspect of life, whether it be crime and taxation and the way we approach kids, everything is upside down. And so I want us to at least be aware that what we're doing to kids is not doing something for kids. But we've believed that boundaries are a bad thing, that encouraging kids to fight through adversity is somehow intolerable. It's a horrible thing to do. Nope. It helps kids reach their potential. It helps adults reach their potential. I'll tell you a really quick story. For my first job after college, I was an intern at King 5. They paid me $4 an hour to be a tape logger. I have a college degree. And my first job's minimum wage, $4 an hour. I was thrilled to get it. Because I was convinced that I was going to kick down every single door around me and start achieving my goals. And everything that I've done professionally has grown out of that King 5 internship and then $4 an hour job. Well, one day, or one long weekend, my now wife, girlfriend, we traveled together before we got married. Don't tell our daughters this. We went to Lake Tahoe. Now, we couldn't stay at Harrah's or any of the big fancy casino hotels, but we stayed at the Lake Tahoe Inn, a Best Western motel, had a hot tub across the parking lot, all we could afford, and a massive snowstorm came in to the Reno Tahoe area. Roads were shut down, and I was supposed to be at work the next day. To my $4 an hour job back in Seattle, was I essential? No. Could they have gotten by without me? Sure. I was a minimum wage kid. Was I going to miss a day of work? Absolutely not. They finally cleared a road between Tahoe and Reno. But there are flights, every flight to Seattle, including the one we were booked on, every flight to Seattle was canceled. There was one flight out of Reno that I was able to get on, and it was to Portland. Well, my wife's from Vancouver, B.C. I mean, B.C. My wife's from Vancouver, Washington. I don't even know where my wife's from. She's from Vancouver, Washington. So I arranged to take the Seattle to Portland flight. My wife's sister picked me up at the Portland airport, and then they had an extra car in the family because my wife had left her car down there. So I get a ride to Vancouver. I was able to drive from Vancouver to Seattle, and I got to King 5 by noon on a Saturday, which was my time to report to work. I drove from Reno at about 4 a.m., from Tahoe at 4 a.m. to get to the Reno airport. Still snowing pretty good. I was 21 years old. But there was no flipping way that I was going to miss. I had just gotten this gig. Could I have called them and said, I'm snowed in? And I can't make it back. All the roads are closed and no flights to Seattle. Of course. Would they have punished me for that? Of course not. Was that even remotely acceptable in my view? No. They gave me a job. I had a job to do. I'm going to show up and I'm going to do the job. And if it means flying to Portland and hitching a ride to Vancouver and driving from Vancouver up to Seattle and doing all of that before noon on a Saturday, then that's what I had to do. And I'm not throwing this out there as if it's, you know, the most noble thing in the world. But I'm just saying that if you want to accomplish things in life, sometimes you have to outwork all of your competition. And I find it distressing here in Washington State that we are telling kids that instead of outworking their competition, that pulling the blankets over their head some days is the way to go. It's a horrible message. Horrible, I tell you. Up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Speaking of our kids, so we're on the brink now of vaccines for children 5 and under. And I've been saying something the last couple of days that I think it's crazy to inject kids, especially that age, because they don't die, even if they get COVID. And somebody sent me some link saying 1,000 children have died from COVID in the United States of America. No, but I'm talking about Washington. And I'll tell you something really interesting about Washington. According to the CDC database, if you go to it, there are children who have died around the country, very tiny numbers. But in Washington, for the age groupings 0 to 4 and 5 to 14, according to the CDC's website, there are zero children deaths in the last 2.5 years, so the entirety of the pandemic, zero child deaths in Washington State under the age of 15. Now, I did want to confirm that. So Nicole and I both went to the State Department of Health data dashboard, which used to have accessible information about COVID deaths by age. And both Nicole and I are pretty good at navigating around the data dashboard, and we could find absolutely no data. It looks like it's gone now from the Department of Health. So, Nicole, we have invited the State Department of Health to come on the show. I hope they'll come on this afternoon even, if not today, tomorrow, Thursday, I don't care. But what happened when you called them this morning and told them that was our question?
Well, I'm told that the question is being sourced, and they'll get back to me, and I just still haven't got a response.
Okay, being sourced. Yep. What does that even mean?
I don't know. I'm assuming the person that I asked didn't know, and she or he is trying to find out the answer.
Okay, and we told them we were going to be talking about this at noon.
Right.
The CDC, the national CDC COVID website database, shows zero child deaths under the age of 15 in Washington State over the last two, or the entirety of the pandemic. And my point is that I continue to believe that vaccinating children is simply one of the greatest scams ever perpetrated on America by pharmaceutical companies, that we are finding no compelling evidence that there is a medical reason. I will also tell you that in a database that I did find, in the last couple of weeks, not one child under the age of 15 has even been hospitalized in Washington State. So kids aren't dying. Kids are not even getting very sick. So my question is, why in the world would people start injecting their three-year-olds? It makes no sense to me. Now, if it makes sense to you, it's your family, it's your call as a parent. But, I mean, I will also share with you a little bit later this afternoon about how the CDC has manipulated data to make it look worse for children than it is in reality. There is a lot of nefarious, really bad stuff going on in this continued effort to push hundreds of billions of dollars of revenues to pharmaceutical companies. We'll stay on it. Department of Health, we still want you to confirm what we have found, and that is according to the CDC website, that no children in Washington have ever died under the age of 15 from COVID. And we welcome the Board of Health, because that info seems to be missing now from their data dashboard. Maybe Jay Inslee will come on, the data daddy. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, we are just getting started on this Tuesday. We're going to check the news for you, and then the guy doing that newscast, Aaron Granillo, he's going to join me live because he has been working on a fascinating story about the deadly effects of fentanyl in our region and in our state. Some of the information is stunning. Aaron and I will talk about it next here on the Dory Monson Show. We've talked often about how in King County a few years ago, they decriminalized all drugs, heroin, meth, and then the state Supreme Court 2 years ago did the same thing statewide, which has made the drug problem explode as addicts from all around the country have been coming to Washington. Between that and the fact that most crimes, property crimes that they need daily to feed their drug habit, that they don't get punished here. So we've got this perfect storm, but now the numbers, the toll is absolutely staggering. Our Aaron Granillo has been working on this story for quite a while and has just had great coverage on this and joins us live. So first of all, Aaron, why did you guys decide to pursue this on such an in-depth level?
Well, the trajectory is not good here when it comes to fentanyl. We know that it's killing way too many people. A lot of young people especially are dying from, unknowingly taking these fentanyl-laced pills. And we wanted to make an awareness campaign, let people know what's happening, and let people know that the fentanyl is still out there in full force, and it's not slowing down.
And what's amazing is, in 2015, three fentanyl deaths in King County. What is the most recent number?
So last year, 396 people in King County. So over a six-year period, you're talking about essentially, nearly 400 more deaths. It's pretty remarkable. Statewide, last year, we saw for the first time overdoses surpass 2,000. Now, about two-thirds of those deaths involved fentanyl. So the numbers, the trajectory is not good. One of those recent deaths was this kid, 20 years old. His name is Jaden Barker. I had a chance to meet with his family. They tell me, by all accounts, he was a good kid. Played soccer, played football. He was a straight-A student, went to Everett's Cascade High School, graduated. But then a couple years later, he has some addiction running in his family, and the family fears that caught up to him. And he started messing around with painkillers. Well, it didn't take long. Only 6 months later, he came across a bad batch. This is his aunt, Kendra Cruz.
I think it was a quarter of what he thought was a Percocet, and that's all it took was a quarter. It probably wouldn't even take that much, but he never woke up.
A quarter of a pill is all it took, and the toxicology report, Dory, showed that it was 100% fentanyl in Jaden's system, no Percocet.
Because I also know from your reporting how little fentanyl it takes to kill somebody, to kill a human being.
Yeah, we're talking like 15 grains of salt worth of fentanyl is enough to kill. That's the big issue here, is that it's produced by mainly Mexican drug cartels. There is very, very little, if not any, quality control involved in these, clandestine warehouse labs. So they have perfected the formula to produce fentanyl, but how much gets into each individual pill is kind of a crapshoot. One might have a couple grains worth, the other might have 30 or 40 grains worth, and you just don't know what you're going to come across when you take it.
Well, and, people ask me all the time, well, what's their motivation if it kills their customers, but they're willing to assume that business risk because if they can get people even more, set the hook, if they can get them just desperately addicted, which is also what fentanyl does in those very small doses, right?
It is 100 times more powerful than morphine. It is cheaper. It is more addictive, and it's cheaper on the streets. So it is the drug of choice today for many of the users that we see. Now, I also talked to a couple of users myself, and they tell me that the reason you see a lot of people smoking the blue pills is because you can sort of contain how much fentanyl you ingest. If you swallow a pill, one of those blue pills, that's pretty much, it could be a death sentence because you just don't know how much you're getting.
So the users you talked to, what were they telling you about it?
It's in everything. I mean, it's in heroin, it's in meth, it's in the prescription pills. It's not just those M30s that we've come to know so well, the blue pills. Like Jaden's story, it's in Percocet. If you don't get a prescription pill from the pharmacy, the DEA found that about 40% of the pills that they seize include fentanyl. It's everywhere. I was able to go out on a drug bust operation with the Snohomish County Regional Task Force. They were tracking this low-level drug dealer that they've been trying to get for a while. I was there, and I had a chance to actually speak with this dealer. Now, he says he's been busted before, and he speaks limited English because he's a Mexican immigrant. And he tells me that he does this. He sells pills to support his family. Here's a little bit of the conversation I had with him.
They still are in school in Mexico and right here too.
Do the drugs come directly from Mexico?
No.
There's a middleman?
Yeah, somewhere in Seattle. I don't know where he receives from Mexico.
The pills that you do sell, they do have, more often than not, fentanyl that could cause a deadly overdose.
I don't know so much about the pill. I don't know. Just so I know that the people, a lot of people are looking for that. That's it.
A lot of people are looking for the pills?
Yeah.
And of course, Dory, in that bus, they uncovered, you know, hundreds of those blue pills. Each one of them can kill somebody.
Well, and the insidious evil I've come to learn is these Mexican source for these pills, that they have invested a fortune to replicate what you would get from an oxycodone at the mm-hmm. pharmacy. And the people on the streets are presenting it as if it is a legitimate pharmaceutical pill. But I mean, even from, they stamp those letters and numbers that are on pills to make it look like it's legit, right?
Exactly. That M30, it looks like exactly what you would find at a pharmacy. If it comes from the street, though, again, you know, 40% of the time, it's not. It probably includes at least some level of fentanyl. Some level of fentanyl, by the way, that is directly sourced from Mexico the majority of the time. Let me tell you what the commander of the Snohomish County Regional Task Force told me. His name is Jay Baines.
The crime down there and the cartel and the way they run things, I'm sure the officials in government down there are scared to death of them. And for the Mexican government to take ownership in that, I think, is an uphill battle for the United States and our borders. And it's more open now than ever.
So the Border Patrol actually just released their April drug seizure numbers. 1,200 pounds of fentanyl was caught along the southern border. That's just how much was caught.
Yeah.
It's a slim amount that actually, you know, of the total that comes through.
So the family members that you've talked to have lost loved ones. I mean, there is no greater heartbreak in the human condition than losing a child. And I know you talk to other members of families too. Mm-hmm. It's just, I don't understand why this is being allowed to go on to the level it is. And I understand there are, you know, lots of challenges in cracking down on it, but closing the border would be number one. I mean, we've got like a 9/11 happening every few months in America. It's the number one killer of people 18 to 45 years old in America. And we did all these things to clamp down on airlines and travelers after 9/11. And yet we leave our border wide open when it's killing people in numbers that are unimaginable just a few years earlier. It's crazy.
As long as you're going to see the record number of people trying to cross the southern border, at last count, I was about 1.5 million children and adults so far this year, according to Border Patrol. There's a connection there. I mean, you know, when you are understaffed at the border and the agents can only respond to so many people at a time, the cartels know that, and they're going to slip the fentanyl across. The majority of it does come from there, and the Mexican government is not cracking down on it. And the approach that we're deciding to take here is, knowing full well that it's coming in, we're not going to criminalize users. So the approach that this region, that this state, that the elected leaders have decided to take instead is harm reduction. We know about the safe injection sites proposals and clean syringes and things of that nature, and educating people about Narcan and overdose reversal drugs. So as long as we're going to allow the fentanyl to pour in, essentially, that's the approach that we're going to take, is to educate and to try to at least reduce some of the overdoses.
Understood. All right, good stuff. We'll hear more on this in the next couple of days from you, and Colleen have been working on this. Great stuff, Aaron. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Aaron Granillo joining us live, and I'd love to hear your thoughts on all of this. You can text us, 888-973-CHIRO, 888-973-5476. Lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. I was talking about the mental health days versus the kid who got perfect attendance over 13 years. And, you know, who would you rather hire? The perfect attendance kid or the kid who just doesn't feel like coming in once in a while? And it's obvious. It's obvious. We're encouraging the wrong things here. And I said, but you know, it's like years ago when we talked about participation trophies. I got a text message from Nick who writes, "You so easily forget that you boomers are the ones who handed out participation trophies. We did not ask for them." Okay. I will agree with you, Nick, that some of my fellow boomers handed them out, but I never did. But it was so funny. In third grade, I was coaching a team of third graders. And there was one team that went undefeated, and our only loss was to that undefeated team. So there were no standings. I don't even think you were supposed to keep score. But I was talking to parents after the last game, and they're planning the end of season party. And one of the parents said, "Well, I'll order the trophies." What? "I'll order the trophies." I said, "No, we're not having trophies." She goes, "What? We only lost one game. We went 10-1. "Yeah, but the team we lost to went 11-0. But we had a great season." I said, no. I said, "It was a great season. We had great time, great connections. But you only get a trophy if you win a championship. So even for second place, I was never about trophies." So Nick, fellow boomers gave him out, but don't lump me in with the rest of them there, because I never did. And, you know, I've mentioned this many times. Right behind me, I've got three trophies sitting on the table right behind me in my office. Only one from childhood. When Ballard Bank won the West Ballard Little League Championship. And man, that trophy mattered. So I still have it. 48 years later, I still have it because we won the championship. And then I've got one when we trophied fourth place at state and when we won the state championship in high school. Those are the only three trophies. Third place, sixth place, come on. We're also talking about how the data is disappearing as we get closer and closer to vaccinating children. The data about how sick children are getting or not getting from COVID is fast disappearing from CDC and Washington Department of Health websites. And then amidst all of this, Dr. Anthony Fauci is now telling you and me we better start masking up indoors again.
The more people that get vaccinated and boosted, and the more people that realize the importance of when you have a high level of viral dynamics, that when you're in an indoor setting, you should wear a mask, even though the whole world, including the United States and the UK, are just worn out and tired.
Yeah, but start masking up again, says Dr. Fauci. Who better to base your life's mission on? Okay, we're going to check the news for you at the top of the hour, and then the fastest 15, including the bizarre lawsuit that's been filed against taxpayers, next.